It is 11:06 here in Tennessee, and Friday morning, we're breaking from tradition a little bit. That means it's time for another trip down the homeward path. You're here with Adam, as per usual, and we have a special guest this week. Brett, say hi, Brett.
Hey, how's it going?
Brett has been friends with me. Brett has been my best friend longer than some of my listeners have been alive.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
we were like 7 years old in Boy Scouts, or probably then.
That's pretty much it, yeah. So, I mean, in my case, it's 23 years.
Yeah.
It's a long time to not hate somebody.
Exactly.
This is the show by me and MTG Dad for all of you at home who are like me, trying to play Magic on a budget, trying to play on a lack of time, lack of disposable capital, whatever the case may be. And Brett is an extremely special guest in that regard because he is one of you.
That's true.
I mean, on both ends, time and finances.
Right.
So
everything's tight on this end of here.
Oh, don't I know it. We're in the same boat here now. But this week, in light of the success of Mono Blue Tempo at the Mythic Championship in Cleveland, I thought it would be worthwhile to not only break down that result itself, but also kind of one of the corollaries of the entire situation, which is the fact that we have a viable budget deck in Standard, and it's really easy to look at it and say it's only ever been this one, but I thought it would be a really good exercise to look at what makes a good budget deck, Standard, Modern, Legacy, Pauper, whatever.
Okay.
So I thought that would be something that would be good to talk about.
Yeah.
Originally, it was going to be like a dive into finance, but, I mean, what works for me in finance doesn't always work for everybody else in finance. No, I'm extremely fortunate a lot of the time. So, first, we're going to give a shout-out to the people who make the show possible. It begins with the network over at ConstructedCriticism.com. Their stuff is great. You should listen to it. And I don't just mean you, Brett. I mean everybody.
Right. Yeah, but it is pretty good.
And then other things you should check out is our sponsor at inkgaming.com. They have sweet stuff, and if you use our promo code CCMTG10 at checkout, you get 10% off your order. You can get custom playmats, deck boxes, mouse pads, like table-sized playmats. You can make your entire playing space look sweet. And what else would be sweet is if you decide you're getting enough back out of this show that you want to donate, you can do so at patreon.com/homewardpathmtg. The last thing I purchased with patron dollars was the splitter that I used to record the episode with Nick on the way to Memphis. The next goal is probably either going to be a new headset or a camera and mount for the car for the summer months when there's actually light when I'm driving home so that I can do video. It's basically going to depend on how much longer this headset holds up. So all of the shilling out of the way, let's start talking about the Mythic Championship. So Brett kind of got pressed into service at the last minute here this week, but it's a situation where it was an idea where I really wanted to be able to bounce some of this stuff off of another person. And in particular, Brett is kind of in between decks in a lot of formats right now. So I thought it would be a really good idea to have someone I could bounce this stuff off of.
Uh-huh.
That is actually working on it right now.
Yeah.
So Mythic Championship Cleveland, the big reason I wanted to talk about budget decks is because of the ultimate success of Mono Blue Tempo in the hands of one Autumn Burchette, who is the best Magic player you haven't been watching, and I feel so sorry for you that you haven't been watching them. The level of mastery put on display in that top 8 was nothing short of phenomenal. Autumn beat Mono Blue Mirror, Mono Blue Mirror, Esper Control in that top 8. Think about that. And didn't just beat them, like, next leveled all of them along the way. That's the craziest part of it.
Yeah, okay.
when taking down the Esper control player, Autumn boarded out Tempest Gym completely.
Okay.
Scariest card in the deck.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't he what basically makes that deck?
It's the thing that helps you race. Yeah. But they correctly realized that racing is not what that matchup was about. It was about staying on the lowest possible, the most extreme end of mana efficiency possible, getting after the opponent, making them react, and then having answers for their interaction. And that allowed Autumn to just kind of cruise through game 4 and 5. These were games, I'd say cruise, I mean, it was really tight, really well-played games on both sides. It's not as easy as Autumn makes it look. I promise. So, there was a bunch of other stuff in the top 8 and even the massive decklist dump they did on the other side of it. I think they went all the way down to decks that had... I think it was decks that were basically plus one win over losses or better. So 6-4 or better out of the 10 standard rounds. And the format just looks still, even with the success of Mono Blue and Nexus and all of that stuff, it still looks like it's just wide open right now. There's a lot of things that did well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the Mythic Championship Cleveland now, and it's, you know, Autumn Burchett's Mono Blue Tempo at first, Esper Control second, Is It Phoenix, again with the Tempo. Looks like you can go Azorius or Gruul Aggro. Then it connects. Yeah, you're just way open for what you can choose for the standard, and, you know.
I mean, we say Azorius Aggro, it's White Weenie with a splash. It is White Weenie splashing sometimes main deck Deputy Detention, but usually just sideboard copies of, like, Negate and Spell Pierce.
Deputy Doug.
Deputy Doug. Get him. But, I mean, even going further down the list, Pascal Maynard played a really interesting take on Teemer Reclamation that was not playing Nexus of Fate. I have a healthy amount of respect for somebody who just decides they don't want to play that card.
Yeah, from what I've watched online, it just drags games out so long.
I believe it was... who was it who was talking about Nexus? Said, you know, it was Brian Gottlieb from the Game Podcast did a tweet about it in response to one that Wizards did talking about the Nexus decks. And they said, you know, they want to win the game with Krasis or find a massive spell to kill you with. And I said, I was honestly of the opinion that the win condition for Nexus was just your opponent deciding not to play the game anymore because they valued their time on planet Earth.
Kind of like eggs.
I mean, to an extent, but... Like, eggs, at least you know, is building to something that's going to kill you.
Yeah. That's true.
It's not always the case with Nexus. They might just be trying to spin their wheels long enough to make you get frustrated because they don't actually have a win condition and they don't have a way to find it. That's what happened to Shenhar on stream. And it dragged on for about 3 hours.
Yeah.
They were just sitting there looping Nexus over and over and over, and that is why Nexus of Fate's banned in Arena on Best of One. So, like, I understand that. I don't know if it needs to be banned in regular standard. Time will tell. I haven't played against it enough to know. I primarily get to play mostly Best of Ones on Arena, so now that it's banned, I don't have to play against it.
Yeah.
But my matchup with it at Memphis was pretty reasonable. As the mono blue player, and then as the weird, like, Teemer aggro thing that I threw together that has not tested well since.
Yeah.
But it looks like a format that is just wide open. As long as you have a deck that does a thing and that thing lines up well against what you expect other people to be doing, you're in a good spot. So, along those lines, let's dive into the main topic because I know you're interested. Which is, let's talk about, because Mono Blue Tempo might be the cheapest deck I've ever seen completed, like main deck, sideboard, full mana base, everything, to win a major tournament.
Yeah, you're looking at what, $85 tops?
Yeah, and that's, you know, maybe more if you want to make your lands pretty, if you want to go like all unstable or all unhinged basics.
Just foil out the whole deck, just pimp that deck out.
Yeah, I mean... Would you not? If I had the cash, I would, but, you know.
No, I wouldn't do that because I'm personally not a fan of foily cards.
Wow, that's fair.
I
guess that's why we don't play Yu-Gi-Oh! Anymore, right?
That's part of it. I'm card sprinkling.
I can appreciate the level of commitment to the troll job that Autumn had, because they put – it was 19 basic islands in their main deck, and not a single one of them was the same as any of the other ones. Autumn made a point to play 19 mismatched basic islands.
Hey, I do that too, but it's partly because I just use what I have.
Well, I mean, same, yeah. But I, you know, normally I like to go through and pick arts from the same set, or I like to go through and find the ones that I like. Autumn just played all their favorite lands, all their favorite islands, all 19 of them.
I just find 19 islands, there you go. That's what you get.
I'm talking completely mismatched. There was an unstable, there was an hour of devastation, there were white bordered old frame, white bordered new frame, black bordered old frame, black bordered new frame, just everything. All the different versions of lands that you could pretty much play, right?
Speaking back on white border, you know, I've been kind of thinking about playing white border lands again, just for, you know, any kind of land search in my decks. It just makes finding them so much easier.
That's not a bad idea. Just the shortcut going through. Yeah.
Especially in, like, Commander.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Sifting through those 100-card decks. I mean, like, you can find your land so much faster instead of just having to, you know, potentially bypass the one you're looking for.
Yeah. Happens to me all the time. And especially since, although it's less of an issue that I can fix when you're playing, like, Guild Gates with Circuitous Route, because you're going to be finding non-basics anyway. But the thing for this deck, it's a good deck that just happens to be cheap. And that's the real thing I kind of want to drive home about what makes a good budget deck. It's really easy to look at a format and say, okay, well, I can play Gruul and just not play Rekindling Phoenix or Skargon Hellkite or Domri. And unless you build your deck in a way that actively makes the deck better, it's actually going to make the deck worse. Because the things I'm looking for when I'm looking at a budget deck, I want a deck that can compete right now, like in the form that it is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sacrificing anything in order to play this deck. Like if I'm playing, you know, black-green undergrowth minus, you know, all the expensive black-green cards, you're giving up something to play that over traditional black-green, because you're basically playing a worse version of the same deck, and that's breaking Patrick Chapin's, you know, number one rule of deck building. Never be a worse something else. So, I mean, that's kind of important. But more than that, it's about just you want to have a deck that is functional. It's as efficient as it can possibly be. That just happens to be cheap. So naturally, a lot of your best budget deck options are aggro decks, and that's really frustrating for people who like mid-range combo control. But it just kind of is what it is, right?
Right.
Aggro decks tend to be one or two colors instead of being these, you know, three and four color monstrosities that we see in mid-range and control decks. To say nothing of, you know, team, you know, Reclamation decks or Guild Gates decks, but we'll get to Guild Gates specifically in a minute.
Yeah, that's kind of a unique thing.
But the fact of the matter is, part of the allure to these budget decks, these aggressive decks, is you don't have to invest in lands. It means you don't have to get into Standard, and you can use these decks as a way to branch you towards something later. So, like, for Mono Blue, for me, I got into it last Standard. I got a lot of the cards for it last Standard. You know, I had Curious Obsessions. I loved the card. I had Curious Obsessions. I liked the card. I had, what was it? I had the Miscloaked Heralds. I had the, words are failing me right now. I had the Siren Storm Tamers and all this stuff. Like, last year, before Grand Prix Memphis, 2017, I'd actually had a build of blue-black tempo together that I tested ahead of the event, and ultimately I decided not to play the main event, so it didn't matter, and I ended up just kind of poking around, doing side events, and trying some weird stuff out. But a lot of the things that I was doing in that deck translated to mono blue once it was time to sleeve it up. Like, and it's things that I'm kind of revisiting now. But it was an aggressive deck that had a little bit of disruption, so it had the ability to game against decks that were trying to play kind of that stage two, you know, mid-range control trying to pull ahead in stage two, Nexus trying to get completely set up in stage two, all that good stuff. Like, that's the thing. The trick number one for picking a good budget deck is you want to find something that occupies a space. In the case of Mono Blue, it's a deck that operates really, really efficiently in stage two. So, like, in the turn four to turn seven range. You know, while a lot of other decks are interested in casting four and five mana spells, you get to cast all these two and three drops that just keep your opponent at bay.
Okay.
But even something like Mono Red, you occupy a spot. You are one of the best early game decks. You are really good at putting a lot of pressure on your opponent and forcing them to have the correct interaction in sequence. That's not a bad thing.
No.
And even further down that line, like, you are one of the better decks at punishing the really late game control decks. Just because of how you're constructed. And then we have one of my favorite ones to talk about in the standard, and it's one that I really like, is the Guildgates deck. Now, the absolute optimal build of Guildgates is going to play Hydroid Crisis, and that is an unfortunate circumstance.
Yeah, it is. Card is way, way expensive.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, Magic is a supply and demand economy, right?
Yeah, that's true. And you already know my opinion on the Hydroid Crisis.
Anyway. Yes, I do. We don't have to get it on tape and watch the riots happen on Twitter afterward.
You guys on Twitter can just use your imagination.
Yeah. Anyway, the card is extremely good at catching you back up when you've spent the early game behind. That's why it's so popular. It's why it's so good.
I mean, it's Sphinx's Rev on legs, basically.
Yeah, it's half a Sphinx's Revelation that also comes with a big creature attached to it. It's right. Really, really good Magic card. It's the price inflation that we are not super fond of. It's not that we don't think it's a good card. I just can't justify paying for that over buying a deck.
Yes, exactly.
Buy
one Hydroid Crisis for me, or go out and buy a complete Pauper deck.
Yeah.
You know, I could play that Pauper deck eternally.
Yeah.
So, naturally, the Pauper deck's going to win for me.
Yeah. Understandably. But, like, again, the framework for the Guildgates deck also occupies a spot, because it's, again, it's really good at going over the top of these mid-game decks, where the Mono Blue deck goes kind of under them and beats them up with mana efficiency, you know, trading one and two mana for their three, four, and five mana spells. The Gates deck does a really good job of just generating a ton of raw card advantage and just getting something on the board that'll kill your opponent. Like, I played a game against Mill yesterday wherein I should not have won this game. Absolutely should not have won this game. But I was playing, I had Gatebreaker Ram and Nimbizzet on the board together in my four-color Gates deck, and I cast Niv-Mizzet. Just want to take that into account. I cast a blue, 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 red, red, red spell in my four-color deck. opponent is at 19, leaves two mana open, and I cast... I attack with the Gatebreaker Ram. They go to cast Blink of an Eye, and we go, like... Growth Spiral, opt, Shivan Fire my Knight of Autumn to draw enough cards to find negate to counter the Blink of an Eye and kill my opponent.
Oh, that's nice.
I drew 7 cards in response to their attempt to not die to find the thing that would make me kill them. It was thoroughly disgusting.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
But it's another case where you just kind of, you occupy a really interesting spot where you're really good against these mid-range decks, not because you go under them like Mono Blue does, but you go over the top of them. You just have a lot of powerful Magic cards that are made possible because of your budget mana base, not in spite of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, you're not making any concessions to play the Guild Gates deck. You're actively interested in playing all these Guild Gates.
Well, yeah, because they benefit you in some way or form later on in the game.
I mean, Guild Summit's really, really good. Gates of Blaze is really, really good. Gatebreaker Ram, really, really good. Gate Colossus is just this kind of Michael Myers character that just keeps coming back to put an 8-8 on the board and scare the pants off your opponent. Just a lot of cool stuff going on. And then that brings me to the next point about, especially if you're just now thinking about investing in a budget deck, this is where my kind of system, for lack of a better term, comes in. It would be really easy for me to tell everybody listening that the best way to go right now is just to go out, buy Mono Blue Tempo, top to bottom, master it. It's a really good deck. It won the Mythic Championship. You shouldn't play anything else, and it's cheap enough that you can get into it. But the cards that are in that deck that are going to be available to use after rotation are currently Terramander, Essence Capture, and, you know, some of your flex slots that you may or may not be playing. Not a great look.
No.
That's not to say don't buy anything that's going to rotate. But the fact that the deck is so heavily invested in Ixalan, Rivals of Ixalan, and Dominaria just makes me give pause before suggesting that someone get into it right now. Because it's kind of like being the football team that comes out after halftime with a little bit of a lead, and you decide you want to start trying to run instead of trying to pass to hurry up and score again. It's not that you can't – it's not that you need to worry about the clock, but it's not going to hurt you to do it. You know, it doesn't hurt anything to set yourself up for success as things go longer.
Right.
So, like, if I had to make a recommendation today for a budget deck that I would suggest you get into, Guild Gates is a really good spot because you can play the framework without the Krasis now, and it can compete at the local level. And that can in turn help you build value, whether it's, you know, prize packs, or you open your prize packs and trade cards in for store credit, or, you know, you play it at a smaller local 1K and just happen to spike it really well. You can get your Hydroid Krasis, and then you're in a good position. You're literally making no concessions, and you have not spent a ton of money on your deck. Right?
Right.
So, like, that's a really good spot to be in. The other one I would recommend is Drake's.
Yeah, that's a good one, too, because that one can easily translate over into Modern once it rotates out of the Standard season.
Well, it's another case where you've got a shelf where most of your cards are super cheap. If you can make it happen, I would definitely suggest not skimping on your Steam Vents and Sulfur Falls. Like, if you can't play it with those, don't try to play it without those. So maybe play something else to help you get to it, or, you know, play some Limited to get to a point where you can get to it. But it's because of how the deck is constructed, because of how it operates, you really don't have a lot of spots in your mana curve where you can afford tap lands. So, you know, playing Is It Guild Gates and Words, what's the other land? Anyway, the Highland Lake. Playing Is It Guild Gates and Highland Lakes is just not really where you want to be in that deck, because the difference between Sulfur Falls or Steam Vents on turn 3 when you're trying to cast Enigma Drake and drawing Highland Lake or Is It Guild Gate on turn 3 can be the difference between you winning or losing a game. So, like, that's one of the things I'm trying to get at here, is not making concessions due to budget, but making sure you're playing something that can compete at the budget that you have available. Does that make sense?
Yeah, basically just don't go out of a way to put in a card that's going to underperform.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, don't go out of your way to put in a card that's going to underperform, and don't go out of your way to, like, if you're having to sacrifice the ability for the deck to do what it wants to do to stay under budget, play a different deck.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, and then it's not a bad thing now, especially as we're getting ready to pick up War of the Spark in May and then the core set during the summer, to have a little bit of an eye on rotation. Don't shy completely away from cards that are going to rotate if they're integral to how the deck you're going to play functions. But, like, if it's a choice, if you've got the budget to get either Mono Blue or Drakes, maybe lean more towards Drakes because you're going to lose less. And Drakes has the other advantage of also being a stepping stone into Modern with, you know, potentially if you win enough value in Standard, you can potentially grab your copies of Arclight Phoenix, and then you can just go to town in Modern and have a great time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, playing Thought Scour, Faithless Looting, and Lightning Bolt in Modern sounds like a good time, right?
Yeah, that's a good time.
And, I mean, that applies to all the other formats, too, right? Like, it's really easy for me to say all of that about Standard and then have no idea what I'm talking about when I go into Modern. But even something like, you know, Blue-Red Prowess in Modern, it's not going to win you a ton. But it is a deck you can assemble, and it will be functional. You're not making too many concessions based on your budget. And you can just get people. Like, I have handed it to someone else and watched them win a Modern FNM. While I was playing Mardu Pyromancer and getting my teeth kicked in by Dredge because I didn't draw my graveyard hate, I watched Zach playing Blue-Red Prowess just wreck somebody. Like, I turned around and played it myself a couple of weeks later, and I just killed an Infect player on turn four.
Is that the one with Adelas and Wizards?
Yeah. In this case, the opponent was at 15, and I had Monastery Swift Spear and Adelas on the board together, and drew my card for the turn, did a little math, and moved to combat, and my first thought in my head is as soon as I declared the attacks, I said, please don't block, in my head.
Well, yeah, isn't that what every aggro person says when they attack?
I mean, but, you know, normally in that situation when you're staring at a Glistener Elf on the other side and you've got spells you want to cast and, you know, you've got prowess triggers to resolve.
Yeah.
You're kind of okay with, getting the cards out of their hand and trying to trade their creature because their deck is really good at killing you on the backswing if you don't kill them.
Well, yeah.
So Jeremy looks at me and he says, no blocks, and I couldn't help but make the reference to the Ink Gaming playmat. I said, did you just say no blocks? So he says, suddenly I regret this decision. And down came Lightning Bolt, Wizard's Lightning, Wizard's Lightning, take 18.
Ugh.
He was just dead. If you've done nothing but take 2 damage off a Shockland, you're dead in that situation.
Right, which pretty sure a lot of people do.
And then, you know, it turned around a couple of rounds later and was able to bounce a board of spirit tokens with Echoing Truth from Mardu Pyromancer. Goose had like 7 or 8 1/1 spirit tokens. I was down low on life, but managed to clear his board and start swinging back and made it a game. Ended up forcing a game 3 that I ended up losing. So, like, it can compete in the form that it's in, and then it offers a stair step to something like Jeff Hoagland's Blue-Red Wizards, or, you know, a lot of the cantrips and bone spells you're playing are good in Is It Phoenix, or in Grixis Death Shadow, or, you know. It's important to have something in mind when you buy into a budget deck, not just to compete now, but also what you want to do with it once you have more capital.
I mean, it's kind of like how I approached
well, how we kind of approached Abzan rights.
Oh, yeah. Same thing, yeah. We went into it with the idea of it can compete. Now, it occupies a weird spot where it's just a little bit bigger than some of the other mid-range decks. You know, you get cards like Unburial Rites and Siege Rhino. You have the reach that is blinking Siege Rhino or getting Siege Rhino back over and over. You know, whether it's,
or just hard casting.
Yeah, I'm saying getting it back over and over again, triggering that Drain 3 effect over and over and over again is a legitimate path to victory if you just have to sit there and stare at each other on the table. To say nothing of, you know, Ashen Rider being a giant flying creature or, you know, Restoration Angel chipping in here and there. Like, you have a legitimate path to victory that gives you a reason to play that deck instead of traditional Jund or Abzan or just straight green-black. Not saying it's better, it's just different.
Yeah.
And if it succeeds in the endeavor that you're going for, it gives you a path to get into traditional Jund, Abzan, or green-black.
Yeah.
Grimflayer is a real good Magic card.
Yeah, he is. He's a lot cheaper now that he's rotated.
Oh, my God, yes. he's in the, I think, somewhere between the $5 to $10 range. I may be wrong about that. It may be more than that. I can't remember for sure.
I mean, that's better than it was. He was like $20 there for a while when he wasn't standard.
That's true.
So I'd much rather pay like $10 than $20.
I dig it. I dig it.
And I mean, like, realistically, like $10 is not that bad for a card. When I say budget, I mean, like, I'm not talking like nickel and diamond myself to death. I mean, like, $10 is reasonable for a card to buy a paper.
If you want to play, like, hyper-budget, the best format you can possibly play is Penny Dreadful on Magic Online, where you're playing Commander and your entire deck cannot cost more than $1. And that provided inspiration for one of the commanders that I built. When I built Xiu Yun, it was actually after watching the guys on Commander Clash play Penny Dreadful. And Tomer with the Penny Dreadful version of Xiu Yun just killed somebody on turn 4.
Nice. the way I want to play Commander one day is just pick a theme and just run with that theme, like tribal chairs. Everything in there has to have a chair in the artwork.
Isn't that basically how our buddy Brian over at Cure for the Common Game builds decks at this point? He's got 400 now.
Yeah.
I mean,
hey, Brian, if you're listening to this podcast, your next deck should be inspired by Loading Ready Run, rad hats. Everything has to have a rad hat in it. I know you got the cards for it, Brian. You need to do it.
He even picked up a bunch of Soul Rings at Memphis so he can, you know, reload for the next batch of decks.
Yeah, I saw. Oh, speaking of Brian, again, man, you're just popular today, Brian. I sent some pictures, to the group on his Facebook group. Gosh, I can't talk either. Just for the Common Game.
English, do you speak it?
I actually found some more chibi sleeves. I actually ran into of course, the Jace ones that he got. There were some Garrick ones. He was eating like a chicken leg. And he was looking really frustrated. Goodness. Yeah, and of course there was a Gideon one being all lawful.
Are these from Legion, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I love their stuff. Sarah's commander deck is sleeved in Legion TARDIS sleeves and a matching deck box. Like, that's her favorite thing that she owns right now.
Yeah.
Miri.
Miri. Oh, okay.
Tribal
if
cats.
If you want to be really cute, you should make it Joyra.
No. No.
You know, TARDIS.
Oh, I'm picking up what you're laying down. She's just not on board.
She needs to get in touch with her inner Timmy.
I mean, she is, right? She's playing cats.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking like,
she wants to smash some faces in, man.
we're
way off topic at this point.
I'm talking about the big booty creatures.
Anyway, but you know, same thing applies. Another good thing to look at, especially if you're looking for a budget deck in Modern, is the ability to translate into other formats. And one of my favorite ones to bring up, I brought it up to you the other day, Brett, is Infect.
Yeah.
Because you can get, for example, Pauper Blue-Green Infect. And the list that plays well in Pauper, you trade out a few cards because of bannings and cards not being in Modern yet, and you have a deck that can compete in Modern. You change a few cards out, and you have a deck that can compete in Legacy. Invigorate's a really powerful Magic card.
Yeah, let them gain some life just to die.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's kind of the long and short of it. Versatility, longevity, and just a deck that is powerful enough to win now but gives you a clear upgrade path is what I'm looking for when I'm looking for a budget deck. I'm not looking for something that's good with all the bells and whistles in it that I can trim some of the price off. I'm looking for something that can compete now in its current form and then have something to say about, you know, upgrade path later. You know, I played Mono Blue, I played Blue-Black Tempo, you know, variations on the theme, and it got me some prize packs, it got me some stuff that I was able to trade, and I've gotten myself into a good position thanks to the way that I've played this deck. And I'm still going to keep playing this deck because I love it, but that's beside the point. Like, if it had gotten me into something that I liked more, I'd be playing that other thing. But there's some stuff I've got that I want to try out, and, you know, it just, it's worked out well for me in that regard. And then the last thing I would recommend is if you really want to pinch some pennies to make sure you can get your deck under cost, never be ashamed if your LGS or any of your local game store, you know, if you go to a big event, anything like that, to take advantage of draft chaff.
Or heck, even damage cards. Damage cards play just as good as the near mint version anyway.
The only downside to that is sometimes they're not legal at bigger tournaments. So like if you decide to make the leap to a Grand Prix or something, you're going to put yourself in a bad spot potentially.
Oh yeah, I can see where you're going there.
But you know, draft chaff, those cards are cards people literally said, here, I don't want this. Somebody else take it. And I have been able, like, I built the entire Guildgates framework out of a draft chaff box.
Didn't you happen to find some, like, light up the stages on top of that?
Yes, I did. I was very excited because I was not looking forward to having to buy those at $3 a piece. I was just, again, I can't call my MTG finance expertise anything like an expertise because I've just been really fortunate about a lot of stuff. So, long and short of it is, pick a deck that occupies a space, you know, that does a thing good enough to win, lines up well against the format you're expecting to play, and be smart with it. Like, use it, try to win as much as you can. Don't be afraid of getting into something that's not going to rotate over something that will so that you can play it for longer and extract more value out of it. But also, don't, it's kind of the old Will Jonathan tweet that I like to quote from time to time where he was talking about tournament entry fees. He said, if you are showing up to a tournament with and paying your entry fee and you aren't comfortable with the idea of leaving with nothing, you're doing this for the wrong reason. And it's the same thing with buying into a deck. If you are not comfortable with the idea of this thing never getting you back what you put into it, or never upgrading or never appreciating in price or anything like that, you're doing it for the wrong reason. I have been very fortunate in regards to that on more than one occasion because I've been able to, you know, get in on something cheap and then be able to flip it later at a modest profit that was able to get me into something else. But I got into that card because I got into that card or got into that deck because I wanted to play it, not because I was expecting it to jump in price and would have been mad if it hadn't. Right?
Right.
So, I mean, that it should go without saying, but it's definitely something I wanted to say because I know that's not something that everybody necessarily recognizes. So, I mean, again, right now in paper, I've got mono blue and or blue black tempo. I've got the gate stack. I've got mono red burn, and I've got the most expensive deck that I have sleeved up right now is Team of Reclamation. And it is a ton of fun, but I would not recommend it to anybody who is trying to start, you know, start fresh on standard on a tight budget. It is just, it would be really expensive to buy from scratch. Because I'm playing 26 lands, and I think three of them are basics. Yeah. So, you know, 12 shock lands, 12 dual lands, or 12 shock lands, 11 check lands, and then three basics.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a lot of wheeling and dealing on my end to get myself into it. So, at any rate, that's going to wrap it up for this week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Brett, for being a part of this. I enjoyed having a co-host again.
Oh, yeah. Anytime, it was fun. Sorry, we kind of got way off topic. It's kind of been my thing here lately. Just we start out down the road, and then we... You ever watch that episode of Family Guy where, like, Stewie's, like, popped up on the, on the pills or whatever?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Rhode Island. That's kind of how it is with me sometimes. Like, we start out on the road, but then, you know, we don't need roads. We got to be like the pioneers, you know. Just go out there. I love it.
I mean, it's appropriate to make a road metaphor because show title, right?
Right.
The homeward path is not always a straight line.
No. And sometimes getting off the path is a little bit more fun.
So, all of that out of the way, let's let you know how to get in touch with us. If you want to get in touch with the show directly, you can do so on Twitter. I'm at HomewardPathMTG. You can reach me on Facebook. My name is Adam Spain. You can join the Facebook group, the Homeward Pathfinders. It's open entry. Just send a request to get in, and one of our admins will give you a quick once over, and if you don't look like a completely horrible person, you're in. And Brett, what about you? I guess you're in one of the Facebook groups, right?
Yeah, I'm on the Homeward Path group. I think I'm in that one. I'm not sure if I'm in the others, but soon to be joining it. But, yeah, like Adam said, give them, if you really like the content, please do support them. It's what makes content like this possible.
Yeah.
Even though it's kind of mind-numbing with me here at times. But
wow. I mean, it is what it is, right? Yeah. And then if you want to, I'm going to let you get to enjoy what Nick didn't get to because we were driving and in traffic at the time. I'm recording this one from home today because I'm not at work.
Yeah, and I'm not on the road yet.
Yeah, Brett's on his way down this weekend, so there will more than likely be some epic stories of some variety, probably involving Commander. I didn't tell you this yet. Nick and Jared are talking about coming over after you get here.
Sweet.
So they're just as excited as you are.
That'll be fun, because, like, I've not played a game of Commander in a long time, and I really have got, I've really got that itch. Also, Canada, put the bug in your ear. You want to play some fun Commander.
Then we have, so if you want to get in on my favorite segment every week, it's our Twitter outreach program is hashtag MTG Dad Jokes. And I know you love a good pun as much as I do.
Oh, yeah.
So every week I go through and I find my either my favorite ones or usually it's just all of them because there's not all that many. And we got a few good ones this week. One of them is, the first one is from Brian Brunduin about 6 days ago. He was playing day one of the Mythic Championship. He was 3-0 in the first draft and posted his deck list, which contains, let's see, 3 Shimmer of Possibility in his Azorius deck that he drafted.
Hmm.
3 Shimmers. And it says, what do you think your odds are to 3-0? Response, you know, there's a shimmer of possibility.
Yeah, that's good.
Got me. Second one, I don't know if it was intended to be here, but I'm going to take it. I'm going to enjoy it. From John Hammock, says, Reed just got this Pokemon card. It's Trainer Hau, H-A-U. Draw three cards. Seems real strong, right?
Yeah.
Says, Ancestral Recall, more like Ancestral Free Call, am I right? And then I had to give a couple to myself here. The first one was from, it's 2 days ago, it's day 57 of my hashtag 100 Days of Magic challenge, where I'm trying to play some amount of magic that I can glean information from every day for 100 days. And on day 57, I said, after many failed attempts in regular best of one, Mono Blue is a wrecking crew in ranked tonight. I've hardly played ranked, which is probably why, but the deck is just so much fun to play. You might even say I have a curious obsession with it. And then last but not least, it was yesterday, Daniela Diaz, we're at Holy Diva. Holy Diva, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Correct me if I'm wrong. Says I was. That's the first thing that went into my head when I saw that handle come up. Said they were following me. I was super stoked.
Yeah, I know.
Said I
was. Give you more props if you're a fan of Dio.
Right. Says I respect all opinions, but I'm kind of not upset nor opposite about this top eight of the Mythic Ladder thing. The top eight of them going to the Mythic Invitational. So whoever wants to try, well, try. It's on you. Fight for your dreams, whatever. Me, I saw it as a 0% chancer from the beginning, not worth trying. And my response is, I said, I hard agree. I didn't want to set myself up for the disappointment that would come with investing so much time and effort into getting there. I just don't have it, right?
Yeah.
I said, even if I'm magically qualified, magically qualified, reaching. I'll see myself out at the end. I'm not in a position to prepare to make a good showing at the Mythic Championship anyway, even if I were to qualify. So that wraps up this week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Brett, again, thanks for jumping in on short notice. It was a topic I really kind of wanted to bounce some ideas off of. And you especially kind of being in between, we've kind of talked about this in passing, but being able to just actually talk about it as we go here,
yeah,
that it might benefit you.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, and in between is the correct word for me. Like, I've been jumping format since, like, Amonkhet, so, like, my standard knowledge is fairly limited, but... Thanks to you, I'm able to keep up with it somewhat.
We'll work on that some this weekend, too.
But,
yeah, so, you know, TLDO, you didn't want to listen to the whole thing. Skip to the last 5 seconds to see if there's one in here, right? Standard's still great. A lot of different decks you can choose from. Not all of them cost a lot of money. So get out there. Have a good time. Don't forget to take care of the families or whatever other responsibilities you've got. Go forth and slay my Pathfinders. We'll catch you next week.